Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Get the scuttlebutt on your favorite teams here on The Fan.
Call his wife.
And how we doing on this Wednesday morning, 4:03 on The Fan, 888-808-1019. That's the number to call. Off a miserable performance from the New York Knicks. Our baseball teams were far more enjoyable, but who the hell was watching them as they would blow out victories? And the Knicks were standing there with their best players on the sidelines, blowing the game with 2 minutes left. If you can tell, I'm upset about it. I talked about it all day yesterday. I was looking forward to this game because I wanted to see this Knick team make a point. I wanted to see this Knick team put their throat on the opponent and seal the deal and win and close out their first series at Madison Square Garden since 1999. And instead, they came out with an half-assed effort from the jump. And, I mean, the idea that they had a one-point lead at the half is remarkable considering how lousy they played, how bad Brunson was, how invisible, again, Karl Anthony Towns was. Really, I mean, OG Anunoby and his defense were the only damn thing worth anything in the entire first half of the game, and they were just lucky that the Pistons were in foul trouble and couldn't hit a shot either. I mean, they missed 10 foul shots. I know it's 11, but they missed one on purpose. 10 foul shots. They did nothing right, and the effort, the energy, the desire to put this series away just wasn't there. And Brunson had a miserable game. I thought I should, Mitchell Robinson as well had a great game, and I know we're going to talk about, you know, Bridges and the points he scored in the fourth quarter, but I don't know. I know he hit the three, the miracle three at the end. Well, I shouldn't even call it a miracle three, but at the end of the game to keep it close and keep it alive and keep fouling the Pistons and see what could happen on a three-pointer. But where was he when the shots mattered? Same thing with OG and his three. Where were they when the shots mattered? And where was Jalen Brunson? On the sidelines. And I know that's going to be a major talking point. To me, it's a part of why they lost. It is not why they lost. Overall, I thought the overall effort just from everybody and the missed shots and the sloppiness, the turnovers. And if I see another turnover off a turnover, I'm going to lose it. How many times do we see the Knicks either slap a ball out of someone's hands or pick off a pass or, you know, even just get a long rebound and hit the break and then throw the ball away? There was one particular moment where I felt like they were down 6 points. They were going on a run and they got a steal. And Hart, going down the court, tries to throw an alley-oop to Mitch Robinson and throws it right back into the arms of Schroeder. Like, they were sloppy with the basketball. It just felt like they weren't. The energy level and the compete level in Detroit has been far better than it's been in New York. And quite honestly, if not for that 21-0 run at the end of game one, the Pistons have been the better team for almost 90% of the games at Madison Square Garden and have now took two of the first three, and hopefully the only three, played at the Garden in this series. And they have to go back to Detroit. Now, they've won there twice, and that's fine, and I don't dismiss their ability to win this game. I think they can win this game six, and they better win this game six because nobody wants to come back with game seven. So the effort to me, the game Jalen Brunson had, the game Karl Anthony Towns had, and yes, the decision-making by the coach. And I know that's going to be the huge point of this, and I understand why, and it's certainly something I don't understand. I can't understand it. Because to me, the identity, who the Knicks are fundamentally over the last couple of years, have been Jalen Brunson, Mr. Clutch, the best clutch player in the NBA, arguably, in my opinion, the best closer in the NBA. With 2 minutes left in the game with a three-point lead at one point, I don't care that they had to come off the floor because of injury. I don't care that you can't foul. I don't care how many timeouts you have. You cannot watch Cameron Payne run the offense with 2 minutes left of a three-point game while Jalen Brunson stands at the desk waiting to be buzzed in. It cannot happen. This coach has got to call a timeout. I don't care that you don't have it at the end of the game to move the ball up to half court to get a better chance at a last-second point, a last-second shot. That shot's not going to be there if Jalen Brunson isn't on the floor in the last 2 minutes. You cannot waste away the game while your best player, who has had a struggle of a game, no doubt, but your best player who lives for these moments, who has owned these moments, who after coming out of the after game four where he came back from injury and led them to a victory with the way he played in the fourth quarter, that guy has to be on the floor. And they end up calling the timeout anyway off of giving up a basket because they had no choice. Down six. Too late. Too late. Everybody gets it in this game. Brunson was terrible. Karl Anthony Towns was terrible. I don't care how many points he scored in the fourth quarter. Bridges was terrible. Mitchell Robinson had the best game, arguably, of his career with the Knicks. I thought he was great in this game. And OG Anunoby played so damn well defensively in the first half. I'll cut him some slack. And he scored some points offensively and hit the miracle three. I'll give him a break. But other than that, I mean, everybody gets it, including the coach. And that's going to be the talking point. I understand why. And then the post games, coach's decision. Well, what goes into that? Well, a bunch of factors, yeah. Well, can you explain why you felt that one timeout was more valuable than your best player being on the floor while the game's wasting away, while Cameron Payne is missing floaters? While Mikal Bridges is missing pretty much every shot he takes? Like, they don't even have, it's not even Karl Anthony Towns taking the shots. Like, it was just atrocious. The end of that game is atrocious. The beginning of the game was atrocious. They get outscored again badly in the third quarter, which has become a lock. I don't talk too much gambling on this show, but you want a lock? Knicks being outscored in the third quarter. I mean, and more than, it was just an opportunity. And I know everything is predicated on how to beat the Celtics, and I don't know if there's a scenario. I don't know if there's a scenario to beat the Celtics, but if you are going to beat the Celtics, these are the kind of games you have to come out and win and be able to put a lesser opponent out of their misery on your home floor and be able to rest up for Boston instead of having to go back to Detroit and fight for your life. And this, you know, and again, this game was less physical because the refs didn't allow it to be as physical as the first four, which is, I don't know. Is it frustrating? I guess. I thought it was a fairly officiated game for both teams. I don't think either team had a advantage in the way it was officiated. I mean, I would have thought going into the series that they would have been better served, the Knicks, had the entire series been officiated like last night. So I thought, you know, a tightly officiated game probably helps the Knicks because the Pistons are trying to win this game on sheer athleticism and smothering defense and physicality. And they really weren't allowed to do that as much as they have been in the first four games. And yet still, the Knicks have a miserable performance. It just didn't feel like the intensity of a game that had what it has weighing in the balance. And that starts with the coach on down. Everybody gets it. And then, yes, of course, that decision to not call a timeout, I don't understand it. I made the analogy before. I want to make sure for all the people who want to quote everything I say, I'm not saying Jalen Brunson is Michael Jordan, okay? Not anywhere close. But he is the Knicks' equivalent of Michael Jordan. He's their closer. He's the guy with the ball in his hands in the most critical situations of a game. Can you imagine Michael Jordan waiting 2 minutes, the final 2.5 minutes of the game, just standing there waiting to be buzzed in, waiting to be allowed to play the game? Can you imagine Phil Jackson at the end post-game? Well, why didn't Michael play? Well, it's a coaching decision. And, you know, we only had one timeout left. And I know they're in the bonus, so you can't foul that. I'm not putting them at the foul line. But you got to call that timeout. It's not why they lost, but it certainly didn't help them win. And it's a decision that all of us, like, miss shots, I'm not an NBA player. Carl Anthony Towns disappears. I'm not a player. Like, there are things that I can get mad about, but there are extenuating circumstances. All of us can put ourselves in the situation of my best player has to be on the floor. That's an easy one. We can all put ourselves in Tibbs' situation there. What would you do? It's not that hard a question. And to me, I don't know how the hell I could sit there and watch the game run through Deuce McBride and Cameron Payne while Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson are on the sidelines and say, well, I need my final timeout. It's a hard thing to understand. And hey, it's a coaching decision and the postgame doesn't help me any. 888-808-1019. Let's get to your calls. Obviously, Yankee calls as well. Met calls, as both teams had blowout wins, the Yankees with the first team in the history of baseball to have multiple games in one season where they lead it off with three consecutive home runs, and they did it a month ago. And Carlos Rodon was perfect through five. He has been unbelievable. I think it's only fair. Do I still worry about him in the biggest moments? Yes, I do. Do I still fear that, you know, if an error happens behind him or, you know, a ball hits a base and they get bad break or something along, a swinging bunt leads to a first and second situation of him collapsing? I'll always feel that way in a big game until he gets through a playoff series or a playoff game or whatever. But let's be fair. The guy right now is pitching to a whip under one. The guy has been, other than like a couple of key mistakes in games early on in the season, he has been dominating. Not just good, dominating. And his last three starts have been every bit of that. So right now, Carlos Rodon, with the rotation and the status that it's in, where you're relying on Cookie Carrasco, you're waiting for Luis Gil to come back, you're without your ace in Gerrit Cole. As great as Max Fried has been, and he's been terrific, there is no doubt that a fan base that despises the guy mainly, who gets all over Rodon, you have to be fair, he has been terrific for the Yankees this year. He really has. He's been really, really good. I believe he leads all of Major League Baseball in strikeouts. He's got a whip under one, mid-3 ERA, and has pitched big games. And although they didn't need it yesterday, he's been extremely critical to their success so far this season. And of course, the Mets have one of the better defensive innings you'll ever see. They get another great performance from their starting rotation. What else is new? And the offense is really starting to round into shape. They've gotten guys back. Alvarez, McNeil, Vientos has found himself. Nimmo was off this day after the big 9 RBI performance, but they're starting to round into shape other than Juan Soto, which is actually a positive considering you know it's coming. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls, though. Let's get to John in Maspeth. What's up, John? John, you there? Let's go to Hutch in Belmore. What's up, Hutch?
Hey, what's going on, C-Mac? How's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
Very good, very good. So I wanted to talk about the Knicks again, because I've always been a Tom Thibodeau, sympathetic, and I've been a fan of his and thought he's been really good. But over at this playoff series, my thoughts are changing drastically, and I think it's time to go.
I know people are going to feel that way. I don't know if I'm there yet. He's turned around the franchise, and he did respond. Like, I had real questions about how he handled game two, and then game three and four. Like, I really felt like they made an effort to get Karl Anthony Towns the ball and run the offense through him a little bit. And, like, and then again, it disappeared. Now, I'm more willing to blame Karl Anthony Towns than I was in game two, because we've seen a change. And he shouldn't have allowed himself to be, take one shot in the first half or one basket in the first half. He's got to be more involved throughout the entire game. But yeah, Tibbs, look,
you got to give Detroit a little credit too, though.
I think you have to give them a lot of credit.
They're playing great defense.
I agree. And the one thing I'll push back on, and thank you for the call, Hutch. The one thing I will push back on is like the idea of, I know the Celtics are far better, but it's like, if it's this tough to beat the Pistons, like, they should have won this game and the series should be over, and they are better than the Pistons. But the idea that these games are tough and coming down to the final moments doesn't bother me at all. I'm very impressed with the Pistons in this series. I don't know how you can't be. They have played, I doubt very much they are going to see whoever they play the rest of the way, if they make it all the way to the NBA Finals. They are not going to see defensive efforts like this. The Pistons are playing a smothering brand. That's the only way to put it. The Knicks don't have an inch, man. They don't have an inch. I think the Pistons are playing really... Now, offensively, they're not that talented. And they'll go through stretches where they can't find the net. I mean, they can't find the bottom of the net. Absolutely. The entire first half, they got into some foul trouble. They're sloppy with the basketball, too. They've turned the ball over a ton. And then at the end of the game, the inexperience has shown up in most of the fourth quarters of these games. So they're inexperienced. They're sloppy with the basketball. They're, other than Cunningham, not overly talented in putting the basketball in the hoop. And it shows for long stretches. But athletically and defensively, they have been a beast. And if the Knicks would have won this game last night and came out with the intensity I was looking for and were able to put the foot on the throat of this Pistons team, I would have told you that I feel better about the Knicks because of what the Pistons brought. Like, you watch the Bucks blowing games, right? I mean, this was a tougher opponent. Now I'm nervous they're going to lose game six and be forced to play game seven, which you never want to do. But if they had won this game, I would have been very pleased that it was the Pistons. I would have been very pleased that it was tough. I would have been very excited about the test that they were just given and passed in the first round compared to the test of Orlando, compared to the test clearly of Miami with Cleveland, and even the test that the Pacers got with the Bucks, who obviously had to deal with injuries and then, blew a late lead and they got heroics by their guy late in the game. But, like, this is the tougher test. This has been the toughest test. And maybe if they come out of it winning a game in game six, maybe I'll sell myself on that. But I wanted the game five at MSG, because now it's hard to say they aced the test when they lost two out of three in their building, including a closeout game possibility. Now I don't feel so good about the test. Now they got a 65. Yes, it's a tough test, but just passing isn't good enough. If they would have won this game and had a gentleman sweep and all these games are tough and they were the better team in the fourth quarter, they were the tougher team, tougher mental team, found ways, the experience played shine through, and they found a way to win these games, and Karl Anthony Towns came through and Mikal Bridges hit big shots, or whatever the case may be, like, I would have felt like, hey, they had the toughest test any other team in the Eastern Conference had, and they aced it. And they polished off a team in five at MSG for the first time since 1999, and I'm feeling good about this team. This loss I don't know how much it impacts what I feel about the Boston Celtics other than they're not acing the test and now they're not going to be as rested for this series, but now I don't feel as good about it. Now they have to go back to that building and win a tough game that they better win, because I'll be totally honest with you, I feel better. Like, if you told me which game are the Knicks going to win, it better be six. Because if they lose 5 and 6 and all the momentum is now firmly with Detroit and they got to come back to Madison Square Garden where their effort and their compete level has not been nearly as good as it was in Detroit, and you got a Pistons team that has all the momentum and knowing they won 2 out of 3 games in MSG, I'm telling you right now, I feel better about the Knicks winning this game in 6 than I do winning it in 7. So tomorrow night, what goes without saying, is an enormous game 6. You do not want to have this series go 7. Anything can happen. Plus, we've seen how many Jalen Brunson leaves every game with an ankle scare. Every game. In a game 7, we saw it last night. We talked about it the other day. Like I was saying, you don't want to get to a game 7 because at any moment, Jalen Brunson, because in game 4, he's obviously gone for 10 minutes or however long he was gone. You can't afford 6, 7, 8 minutes of basketball being played without Jalen Brunson in the fourth quarter. And at any moment, that could happen with his ankle. And we saw it last night. We saw him have to leave the game, and he couldn't get back in because there wasn't a whistle, and the coach didn't want to call this last time out. What if that happens in a game 7? And the offense is running through Cameron Payne. No thanks. Ralph in Long Beach. What's up, Ralph?
Like you said, like Donna Summer says, enough is enough is enough with this Thibodeau. I'm telling you, did you know that he broke up with his girlfriend during the season just to study more? He's too much. He's a dinosaur. The guy does not understand. Can you smile? It's a destruction. It's passed him by. Tyler's on the bench. What you said about Brunson, the man is a walking bone breaker. What are you going to do, bury players? It just doesn't work. I've been coaching 50. You see, Mac, you know the game. I love the guy, but he's past his time. Ruining Derrick Rose. He's going to ruin Brunson. Brunson's father's sitting there. Let him bury himself. The man is done. He is not ready for the damn game. He's not. He's just past. The guy on Cleveland could have been our coach. He is past. He's just too fanatic. He doesn't play players. Play your bench. Like you said, you're bringing in a kid who's running the offense. Can you give somebody a break? They're looking. I could see in their faces. They don't have that attitude anymore. You lose Detroit. Forget about Detroit. Are you going to beat Boston? The point is to move on.
Of course.
So we beat Detroit. The point is we're not going any further. He's got to be gone. The man is not prepared.
Ralph, I appreciate the call. I want to get to all the calls. I appreciate you made your point. I don't know, man. I think that's a bit harsh. That he's not prepared? You just said he broke up with his girlfriend to prepare. Now he's not prepared? He's prepared. And okay, play the bench. You want him to play the bench in this game? The bench isn't very good. And Brunson sat the first 5 minutes of the fourth quarter to prepare him. Like, that's my issue. Brunson sits the first 4 minutes of the fourth quarter, maybe more than that. But he has a break in the fourth quarter to start the fourth quarter, specifically to have him on the court for the last 6 minutes of the fourth quarter. And instead of making sure he's on the floor for the last 6 minutes of the fourth quarter, he's sitting there holding on to a timeout. That's a problem. That's a problem. But the idea he's unprepared or play the bench, like, I'm not playing the bench. I'm pissed off the bench is playing. Over the course of the regular season, fine, but Brunson's had time off. And honestly, they've been the better team in the fourth quarter for most of these games. I don't think it's a legs issue or play the bench. I don't. And to say that it's passed him by or that Kenny Atkinson can be the head coach, wasn't too long ago Kenny Atkinson had the same reputation and was let go of his job with the Nets because he was the same thing. He is a team builder, not a champion coach. Or at least that's the perception and certainly how Kevin Durant felt. He has the same reputation. Now let's see what he does with it. And maybe they'll lose to Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals, and a lot of the NBA will have the same talk about Kenny Atkinson not being a coach that can get you the championship. I don't know. But, like, I don't think it's unfair to say you went a little too far with Tibbs. I don't know if the game has passed him by. They won 51 games. He's turned this damn Knicks team around when nobody else could. Nobody else could. I mean, Brown went to college, turned programs around. Brown went to the Pistons, won an NBA championship with the least talented team to possibly ever win an NBA championship. He went to the Pacers, they won. He went everywhere, Larry Brown, and nothing but victories and success. He came to the Knicks, he was terrible. Nobody could turn this damn thing around. Phil Jackson's won 10 NBA championships. He comes here to be an executive, and he runs the team into the ground. Nobody could turn this damn thing around. He turned it around. I'm not ready to say the game has passed him by or like anything like that. It's just, is he good at in-game adjustments? Is he good at X's and O's? Is he good at finding the weakness of the other team? Or is he just good at getting a tough, defensive-minded team to play above who they are? And right now he's got a talented team that he had a great season with, but he's making mistakes. And it's going to be a conversation, and if they lose this series, it's going to be a loud conversation. And more than just the coach, if they lose this series, I wonder if breaking up the team becomes a conversation. I never thought that'd be possible, right? And it's tough. They just traded all those picks for Bridges. And it's tough, too, because it feels like it's coming to an end with Giannis in Milwaukee, and that trade is going to end up making it almost impossible to get him. But if you look at this team and they can't get past this Pistons team and they blow a 3-1 lead, including losing what would be 3 out of 4 games at Madison Square Garden if it were to happen, like that's the kind of thing where you're like, maybe you need to blow up this team other than Brunson, obviously. I don't think that'll happen, but there'll be a conversation, let alone the coach, and the coach will be in serious trouble. They don't win this series. Because the What if they lose this series, the defining moment of it will be the last 2 minutes of this game. I would think, I mean, who knows how game 6 and 7 play out, but one of the defining moments of the series will be Jalen Brunson standing on the sidelines and Tibbs holding onto a timeout while they lost game 5. And that's going to be a tough thing to overcome if they lose this series.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Chargers and the New York Giants have exchanged their draft picks.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Eli Manning and Philip Rivers.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
4. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Let's get right back to your phone calls as we only have another 25 minutes or so. Frustrating Nicklaus. Frustrating Nicklaus. Everyone gets a share. I wasn't particularly happy with anyone on the team. I hated the effort that they came out with. They were sloppy. They couldn't hit a shot. Jalen Brunson, by far, just had arguably the worst game. Other than the first two games last year against Philadelphia, that it took him some time to get going. I just thought he was awful in this game. He missed every big shot. Again, Karl Anthony Towns not involved enough. Other than Mitch Robinson and OG Anunoby's defense in the first half, nothing redeeming about this game. It didn't feel like the Knicks came out with the intensity of a game where, I mean, sets up the rest of the series or an opportunity to close out. It felt like it was, hey, you know, the Pistons are the more, I mean, obviously have more to lose. They can't lose this game. So they came out with a better intensity. And instead, the Knicks just didn't match it. And then, of course, Tibbs at the end of the game, which is going to be the main talking point. It's not why they lost. It really isn't. It didn't. It helped prevent an opportunity to win, but they lost this game for a bunch of different reasons, including missed foul shots, turnovers, and an effort that just wasn't consistent with what's needed to close out a team. The fourth game, the closeout win, is always the toughest to get. And they had to come out, especially against the Pistons team, that showed you this entire series they're not going anywhere. Yeah, they've won three of the first four. Yeah, they had a 3-1 lead. Yes, they're the more talented team, but this Pistons team had made it very clear they are going nowhere. And they came out and allowed the Pistons to feel like they were the better team throughout the whole game. And now the Pistons feel like they can win, and they're going back to Detroit against a very confident Pistons team, knowing if they can force a Game 7, they've already won 2 out of 3 of the games played in Madison Square Garden. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Jude in Secaucus. What's up, Jude?
Hey, what's going on?
What's up, buddy?
How are you? What do you think about Danny Hurley coaching the Knicks next year? How about that one?
I mean, if Hurley coaching the Knicks, that'd be interesting. I mean, he's a great coach. I don't know if his style I mean, you want to talk about a fiery head coach to come into the Knicks.
That'd be a complete change. That's the change you were talking about, right? Where, you know,
I guess, yeah. I mean, listen.
Build the stadium and then.
that would be something. Obviously, he's won two championships with UConn. That would be. I don't want to like already talk about Tibbs' replacement. To be totally honest with you, it's not fair. We're not there just yet, and I don't want him to be fired. Like I don't want him to be fired. And if they win this series, I don't think he will be. No matter how it goes against Boston. He's been so important to this team, so fundamental to this team, so, you know, culture changing. And, you know, the Knicks have won back-to-back 50-win seasons. I mean, I just, you would have to really tell me there are better coaching options out there. You would really have to convince me that there is a better head coach than Tibbs out there. But that doesn't change the fact that I don't think he's had a great series. And I think he had a mind-numbing mistake in the fourth quarter of this game with 2 minutes left. I don't understand it personally. You could tell me, hey, you need. I was watching Wally Szczerbiak in the postgame say you need that timeout for the end of the game. I don't know how you could see it that way. I don't know how you could see it as the clock ticks away with Jalen Brunson on the sidelines. I don't know how you could be focused on we might need to, you know, move the ball to half court to have a chance at a last second shot. I don't know how that could be in your mind instead of the game is going away and I don't have my best player on the floor. I don't know how that could be more on the forefront of your mind. And honestly, Tibbs didn't even say that. Maybe that coaching decision. Only one timeout left, you know, time. Well, what goes into that decision? Timeouts, you know, fouls, time and clock, play of the game, you know, a lot goes into it. Yeah, a lot goes into it. Brett in Long Island. Hello, Brett.
I heard a caller snoring on hold. Chris, stop putting the listeners to sleep.
I know. It happens every so often. That's John in Maspeth. I had him through the break.
Put him in timeout for a little bit.
He gets,
let him wake up.
Yep.
Chris,
Mm-hmm.
The one thing you can't do is evaluate a head coach after a loss the next morning at 4 o'clock in the morning.
That's the one thing I can't do. You know what? Unfortunately, that's the job I have. So it's like, it's weird. It's like the one thing I can't do, and yet it's like what I'm expected to do. It's tough, you know?
Figure of speech, Chris.
I got you.
You know, we're sitting here critiquing him.
Yes.
Just remember these conversations. Does he make mistakes? Of course he does.
Mm-hmm.
But the way I look at it, I thought about before he was here, 8 years in a row, I was checked out. We didn't make the playoffs. We were winning 45 games.
Yep.
Like you knew you wanted to make the playoffs. 8 years.
Yep.
So 4 out of 5 years, that's what I keep going back to.
I understand.
And everybody's like, I don't care, championship. I'm like, nah, not really. Not the Knicks. They're not really. And the Knicks right now assembled are not better than OKC. I don't care who's coaching them. All right? They're not. They're not better than. If you told me Spoelstra was coming here. They're not better. Well, yeah, Boston's a little weird with the injury thing. They're a little weird. They don't scare me as much. I don't even know if they're Cleveland now all of a sudden. But my point is, be careful what you wish for.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because, and plus, I think he needs to play Robinson more. That's what bothers me. You see Robinson play nine minutes.
Yeah, I think
he played 11 rebounds. Yeah, that's a mistake.
I think he played I think he played like 20 today.
What did you think
about allowing Brunson to stand on the sidelines for the last 90 plus seconds of the game?
I can't stand Brunson sometimes. I mean, you got to have him.
You think they were better served holding the timeout?
He's a drama queen. Oh, my
son. You're not answering the question.
I'm getting to it. I don't know if his ankle was really hurt and they were, like, trying to feel it out because the guy was keeled over, limping. You never know with that drama queen. And, yes, I love him. He's our clutch guy.
You're not answering the question, and I'm not. And the one thing I can't do at 4:40 in the morning is allow you to talk forever.
Tibbs made mistakes. I said it already. But I don't know.
I'm asking you, would you have put him in the game? Would you have called that final timeout and put him in the game? Are you okay with how Tibbs handled it?
I mean, it looked like he made a mistake there. Like,
all right, he made a mistake there. Thank you for giving me an opinion instead of just knocking mine. It's very nice of you. I don't understand how he did it. Again, I'm not putting the game on Tibbs. I'm truly not, necessarily. I mean, he's the coach. The effort level and the way they played the game falls on him on some level. But the players needed to go out there and take the freaking game, and they didn't. I put it more on them than I do Tibbs, but I don't understand how he handled the last 2 minutes of the game. I don't understand how he does not call a timeout. I'm sorry. That timeout is not more valuable than the last 2 minutes of gameplay without an offense. And if the possessions looked better, like after that first possession, I would have been like, I can't have Cameron Payne running my offense. It's more than just a mistake. It's mind-boggling to me. And I don't want to put the game on that because it's not the one decision that cost him the game, but I can't defend it, and I can't even come to a realization of how he could have thought that was the best thing to do. And Wally Szczerbiak in the post game, like they show Tibbs and his answers, which are, he has no answer. He has no answer in the post game. Coaching decision. Do you have? I'm sure we have that cut in there, Fleeks. He literally just says, well, and a lot goes into it. Like he has no answer, no real in-depth thought. It's just coaching decision. And then they cut to Szczerbiak, and he goes, well, listen, you can't call that timeout. You have to trust your players. I have to trust Tibbs. You know what we're talking about? Tibbs has to trust his bench players in the final 90 seconds of the game. This coach, who won't trust his bench players up 25 in October, has to trust his bench players with 90 seconds left in game 5 of the first round of the NBA playoffs. He has to. Because you'll never know if you need to move the ball up to half court for the final shot of the game. That is asinine to me. That makes no sense to me. This coach who wouldn't trust his bench players to cut his grass has to trust his bench players in the final moments of the game. Of a closeout game and avoid going back to Detroit. He has to trust them and hold on to a timeout? No, sir. No, sir, I do not agree. You have to trust your best players to get back into the game and forego the timeout. That's who you trust. You trust Brunson. Even off a terrible game, missing a bunch of shots, you know, being called a one-flopping MF-er on the court, which I thought was funny when they showed that in slow motion. Like, there's a lot of things that Knicks have to trust. Cameron Payne and Deuce McBride running the offense of a one-possession game with 90 seconds left is not one of them.
Your official station to talk Jets. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, another 10 minutes or so until we take you to the warm-up show. McMonagle here with you, 888-808-1019. Mostly a lot of Knicks as they disappoint us all. And a Game 5 loss setting up Game 6 tomorrow night in Detroit. Yankees and Mets with blowout wins. Another great pitching performance from the Mets, along with incredible defense. Marte with a big home run. Lindor with a home run. Tom Hanks was very happy. And again, I was watching the game with like the sound off because I'm watching the Knicks. Why was Tom Hanks so prominent in the broadcast? Like, they showed him. Every time I turned over to look at the game, I'm like, there's Tom Hanks. I get it. Tom Hanks is there. Like, we've seen celebrities at games before. I don't know why Tom Hanks was such a feature. And you know what else I've noticed? I was thinking about this the other day. I know he was in the stands for game one, I think, or game one or two, because I saw him. But last year, John Starks was practically in the back pocket of every player on the floor, giving high fives and patting people on the back after big plays. We have not seen Starks on the floor at all this year. I was just, not that it's a big deal, I'm just curious. I don't know if they were unhappy about it last year. I thought it was a distraction at one point that Starks was like right there in the middle of every play. They were loving it. But we haven't seen John Starks on the floor at all, unless I missed it. I watched every second of the game. I didn't see John Starks. You saw him last night on the floor, though?
Like on the baseline, yeah.
Oh, okay. I saw him like in game one or two. They panned to him and like him and Larry Johnson and some other guys that were like up in like the second row or the second like tier, almost like the front row of the second tier, it looked like. I haven't seen him on the floor or as nearly like involved as he was last year. Last year, he was practically like, you know, getting the rebounds off makes. It's crazy. This year, not so much, but of course, we have seen the usual cast of characters, including Spike Lee at every one of these games. And Ben Stiller even made the appearance in Detroit. He's become like the new kind of very involved, big-time Knicks fan. I'm sure he's been, I'm not saying he's new to being a Knicks fan, but he's kind of become now the big-time celebrity who constantly tweets about the Knicks and talks about the Knicks. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. Mike in Brooklyn. What's up, Mike?
Oh, hey, Chris. Love the show.
Oh, hey, Mike. Good. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
If I could, I have a Knick point and a Soto point.
Sure. Go ahead.
So the thing with the Knicks is during the year, they couldn't beat the good teams. And clearly, the Pistons are a good team. So I think if they do, God forbid, lose to the Pistons, I think all options should be on the table, including a coaching change and maybe going for the Greek Freak. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, going for Giannis.
Yeah.
I just don't know how they traded away all their draft picks. I don't know how they make it happen.
Well, I think it would have to include, you know, some major players who, like, including Cat, because this team, they weren't able to beat the good teams. That tells you everything.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'm, like, I would do it, sure, to get Giannis here. He's one of the best players in the NBA. There's no doubt. And it seems like he's certainly annoyed. He was pissed off at the end of the game talking with Halliburton's father and, you know, talking crap at the end of this game, seemed unhappy. And it sounds like, you know, feels like maybe there is an end to the run in Milwaukee. I just don't know how they do it. Even with Karl Anthony Towns, I guess, you know, if they can do it, I would swing it. And I'll be honest with you, I'm with you. If they lose this series in particular, I think you're going to see real talk about changing the core of this team. And I do think Leon Rose would do anything
in the name of making this a championship contending team. And if Giannis is available, he will try his damnedest to find a way to make it happen. I just think all those picks would have to been part of it. And I don't know how they do it now with the trade they made for Mikal Bridges. It feels like this was the moves to make the team capable of winning an NBA championship. And it's only year one. You're going to still have these guys in the prime of their careers for at least another 2 or 3 years. And I think they can be better next year. I'd be surprised if they make a big move like that. I think maybe a Kevin Durant would be possible, because at this point, I don't know how much it would cost to get Kevin Durant. Giannis is another thing. I'm for it. I don't know how it works.
Right. And if I could just make a Met point.
Yes.
Right. So the thing with Soto is that clearly he's not the same player as last year. And that could be for any number of reasons. Everyone responds to pressure differently, both external, internal. And it seems like we all know, you know, factually that National League is a better league than the American League. You don't think so?
No, it has nothing to do with American League National League. He's been in the National League. The teams might be better. I don't necessarily think they're facing overall that much better pitching necessarily. I don't think that's it. That it's the National League is tougher. I mean, and why is what would Pete Alonso be doing in the American League? Hitting, you know, having a 2.0 OPS. Like, I think it's just he's struggling right now. For whatever reason, it's just a slump. I don't think it's that the National League is far better than the American League, and that's why he's struggling. Because then why is Tucker with the Cubs having as good a year as he's ever had with Houston? Like, I don't buy that for a second. Although the better teams are better, I'll give you that. The better teams are better in the National League. I think he's just struggling for whatever reason. And you mentioned pressure. This is a guy I thought who was oblivious to pressure, and that pressure wouldn't change him at all, or he wouldn't struggle with pressure at all. Maybe the pressure of being the guy and signing this long-term contract and what his free agency process was like and the $765 million he made and the idea of fitting into a team. And, you know, he got to come into the team with the New York Yankees and pretty much everywhere else he went and just be, you know, he knew he wasn't going to stay necessarily. It wasn't his long-term home. He could come in. Judge was the captain. That's fine. I'm just one of the guys. Now he's got to come in and he's the face of the franchise for the next 15 years. And maybe he's struggling with it for a bit, or maybe he's just in a slump. But whatever the case may be, I do think it's fair. While I fully expect him to have a great season, maybe not as great as last year, but I expect him to be Juan Soto, and for that to happen relatively quickly, there is no doubt the body language was different. And I would continue, but that would put me in the risk of shortchanging Bernadette once again. And I won't be able to sleep this morning if I do it again. So Bernadette in Oceanside, how are you? Oh, Bernadette! Where are you? Hello?
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. What's going on?
Nothing much. I wanted to make a Yankee point, but I really would like to ask you, why do you think Shador Sanders went so far up in the draft? And how come didn't take him? What?
Thank you, Bernadette. I appreciate it. Why didn't Shador Sanders? I don't know. We went over this a whole bunch. Yeah. Go back and listen on the podcast in the Odyssey app over the last couple of days. I've only addressed it forever. No, I mean, a lot of different reasons. Mostly his fault. And then different value evaluations once you get past the second and third round. We went over that. I don't know exactly why, but I'll tell you this. I know people have different opinions on it. For me, I feel bad for him. He is now a sympathetic figure for me, and I'm going to be rooting hard for him to have a good, solid career. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your day. I'll catch you tomorrow with 2. The Warm-Up Show is next. Thanks to Fleegs. Enjoy it. Bye-bye.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM.
The Fan.